community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by La Jarochitas at Southwest Altar between 9th and 10th. Lunch was provided by Dots Cafe, located at 2521 Southeast Clinton. And dinner is provided by Le Bistro Montage, 301 Southeast Morrison. You too can support KBOO. You can go online, kboo.fm, or call right now, 877-500-5266.
The religion of Judaism and the political philosophy of Zionism must be completely separated. Judaism is a religion. Zionism is a political philosophy. And this confusion is well done to keep people more confused. But we're revolutionaries and we believe in dialectics. Out of confusion comes clarity.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Pan-African Film Series. This month, April 27th at 6 p.m., will be a screening of Kwame Ture on Zionism as Africa's Enemy at the Smith Student Union at Portland State University. Kwame Ture, formerly known as Stokely Carmichael, gives a talk on the Zionist movement, the difference between Zionism and Judaism. Again, that's the Pan-African Film Series of Kwame Ture on Zionism as Africa's Enemy, Wednesday, April 27th at 6 p.m. at the Smith Student Union, room 236 at PSU, 1825 Southwest Broadway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, also heard on the web at www.kboo.fm. The time is 5 o'clock. Stay tuned for a special pledge membership drive of the Tuesday Evening News. Please call 877-500-5266 right away to make your pledge right now during this hour of Evening News to help support our volunteers that make the news work. And this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the League of Women Voters of Portland, presenting forums for the Multnomah County Commissioners, candidates, and Metro Council candidates on Wednesday, April 27th, 6 p.m. at Metro East Studio, 829 Northeast 8th Street, Gresham. More voter information at lwvpdx.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on an hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, antitrust regulators approve the proposed merger between Charter Communications and Time Warner Cable to create the nation's second-largest cable company.
In Seattle, one of the first cities in the United States to mandate a $15-an-hour minimum wage, enforcing that law has posed a challenge.
And Herbie Hancock told national educators yesterday that they should include music in their math programs.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, April 26th, 2016. KBOO is currently in our membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by simply calling this number, 877-500-5266. I'm Robert Barncord.
And I'm Jenny Yokoyama. Our close friends in alternative media Street Roots is this week releasing their biannual zine, Sleeping Rough. Here to talk about the poetry and art inside is Dan Jones. Dan, thanks for being with us here tonight.
My pleasure.
So, Dan, this is Street Roots annual spring special edition. What are you extra proud of in there?
As ever, we're amazingly proud of the creativity of the vendors that sell the newspaper. They're an incredibly creative bunch, each of them looking for a platform to express their voice. Whereas the newspaper, the weekly Street Roots newspaper, covers issues on behalf of the people facing these issues on a daily basis, the zine is an opportunity for these guys to hear it from their voice through their eyes. There's a sense of humor, there's a strong sense of creativity, but there's also a brutal honesty there, which kind of shines a light on the difficulties that these guys face on a daily basis, but also shines a light on the enduring optimism of the human spirit, I think.
So I bought a edition of your last zine, and it was filled with poetry. What is in this edition?
So in this edition, we have some poetry, we have some short stories, and we also have some artwork. There's also some guest art in there. We've worked with three guest artists, Carlos Bernal, Nisha Akhtar, and Matthew Jones. We wanted to try and bridge that gap between the street roots community and the wider artistic community within the city. And I think the poems, the short stories, and the art in this edition have elevated this to a level above what even the last scene was, which was great.
So why don't you talk about how all this comes together? Who are the writers who contribute to the scene?
So the writers are the people that sell our newspaper on a daily basis. The guys you see out there outside the local businesses selling, they buy the paper for 25 cents and sell it for a dollar and keep any donations on top of that. So those are the writers, the guys that are experiencing homelessness and extreme poverty, the guys that are actually living it every day. Those are our writers. We're very, very proud of the fact we can give these guys a platform to have a voice. And one of the mottos of Street Roots is to give a voice to those who can't afford free speech. And the zine, this zine is called Sleeping Rough, but the theme changes each zine, is just another way for us to do that.
So, Dan, there are a lot of people who have recently moved to the Portland area. For those people who haven't yet gotten the memo, what is Street Roots and how does your community of writers and vendors work?
So Street Roots is a non-profit organization that creates income opportunities for people experiencing homelessness and poverty within the city. We do that by producing a newspaper and other media that tries to, or that we hope creates change on an individual and a social level. The way that it works for this zine, I mean, even in the weekly newspaper, we have a poetry section, which is where vendors can, they submit their poetry. You know, poems come in scribbled on the back of napkins on cigarette packets, and they just get left on the front desk, and then they get published in the newspaper. And the zine is a way for us to kind of clearly say to the city that these people have a lot to say. They want a platform to be able to express themselves, and so that's what we're trying to do.
So are there certain stories or pieces of art that land in the Street Roots in a unique way? So as journalists and artists, what do you bring to the issue that's different from just the straight media?
Well, I think the great thing about what we do either in the weekly newspaper or particularly in the zine, as this is the story of, I mean, the housing crisis is obviously a huge issue right now since the state of emergency was declared fairly recently. But what this is the story through their eyes. This is the perspective of the people that are living it every single day. So I think that makes it even more powerful. So what you're going to read in these pages, it's 30 pages short stories and poems. We're going to hear there's humour, like I said, but there is also that brutal honesty about exactly what life is like on the streets.
What kind of issues would those be?
So the issue of Sleep and Rough is quite a general one, but it kind of opens up the possibilities for the vendors to kind of really find ways to tell their story. There are stories in there that you would perhaps expect around what it is like to experience life without a place to call home. But it also shines a light on some of the really, really, some of the harshest issues, particularly around the idea of women, vulnerable women who are homeless on the streets. There's a piece in the zine called Life in the Shelters by Maddie Brown Clark, and that when you read pieces like Maddie's, it brings it into stark detail just how vulnerable these people are, and particularly women and young adults.
So, we're running out of time here. So if people are interested in the zine, how can they get a hold of one?
So the zine launches this Friday the 29th of April. It's available from any Street Root vendor for $4. It's going to be available throughout the spring and into the beginning of the summer. But available for $4 from any Street Roots vendor throughout the city. And we would love your support.
And it'll benefit that vendor when you purchase.
Exactly. When you buy the zine or when you buy the paper, that money goes directly into the hands of that vendor, and it's theirs to keep. And it gives them income opportunities as well as a platform to build relationships with people within the community.
Well, thanks, Dan. That was Dan Jones of Street Roots. You can connect with them on street corners around town and online at www.streetroots.org.
Yay, Street Roots.
Thanks for coming in.
You know, KMOVE volunteers have stepped up their game to bring you this locally produced newscast every single weekday evening, and now we're asking you to also step up. Joining us are Seth and Ken to talk about how you can support KMOVE Community Radio.
Oh, thanks very much, Robert, and thanks, Jenna. A great interview with Dan Jones of Street Roots, and that's the kind of news that you're getting on our locally produced 5 p.m. newscast every weekday on KBOO. This is our spring membership drive. If you're not a member and you've been listening, and I know what it feels like because it took me a few years of listening to KBOO before I became a member, now is the best time to call us, 877-500-5266, and become a member. Or if you're currently a member and it's been about a year or more since you renewed your membership, it's the best time to call and renew, 877-500-5266.
We get most of our funding from you, you the listener. That means we don't have advertising sponsors, which also means we're not beholden to anybody. We bring you the news and the perspectives of independent media. We're one of the few around. We are beholden to you, our sponsors and our members. We don't have to pay attention to sponsors and advertising dollars. We pay attention to you and what's important to local Portland and to the world, and to neglected and generally overlooked stories, the important stuff, as I put it. Give us a call, 877-500-5266, or visit us online, kboo.fm. Click on the little donate link. Any contribution is welcome. Any contribution is worthwhile. Nothing too big, nothing too small.
One of the great things about KBOO, Seth, especially whether you're a member or not, is we give free trainings on the radio. And if you want to help us produce the news, we have trainings coming up Friday, May 6th, 4 to 6 to board op, engineer the news. Friday, May 13th from noon to 1, learn how to produce the news, news department orientation. Friday, May 20th, noon to 1, introduction to news writing is how I started on the news.
That's right.
So perfect time. Call up if you're not a member. Become a member right now, 877-500-5266, or renew your membership at that number, or you can go online at kboo.fm.
Yes, so give us a call. I mean, this is independent news. This is your station, community radio. So give us a call, 877-500-5266, and keep us going, or visit us online at kboo.fm. We have a little donate link at the top of the page. Click on there, and we make it easy.
877-500-5266.
Antitrust regulators approved the proposed merger between Charter Communications and Time Warner Cable late Monday to create the nation's second largest cable company, expected to serve 1 in 6 households. The third company involved in this acquisition is Bright House Networks, founded in 2003. It's a privately held company owned by Advance Publications, whose holdings also include both the Oregonian and the Portland Business Journal. A group of public interest media organizations forwarded a unified plea to the Federal Communications Commission Chairman Tom Wheeler in March, urging the commission to deny Charter's acquisition. The Alliance for Community is one of those groups, and their executive director, Mike Wassenaar, spoke with KBOO reporter Robin Ryan about the parties in play and the conditions by which the Justice Department is offering their approval.
The Justice Department's Antitrust Division has given a green light for the Federal Communications Commission to approve a merger between Time Warner Cable and Charter Communications, but also includes Bright House Networks. This represents the second, the third, and the sixth largest cable TV and internet providers. It's a transaction estimated to be worth between $80 and $90 billion. How complex is this set of transactions as compared to the average, everyday, typical merger?
It's complex in the sense that you have the combination of different regional networks coming together into what will be in the formation of what some analysts have called New Charter, I think the third largest network for cable and broadband distribution in the United States. Charter historically has been seen as a regional player, often having rural, Midwestern, and Western regions that they work with. Bright House having a significant presence in Florida, Time Warner having a presence in California, New York, parts of Texas, and in states like Hawaii. It's a much larger player, actually, than Charter. So one of the concerns I think a lot of analysts had as this thing was being proposed was the amount of debt that Charter had to bring on to be able to sort of be the guppy that swallows the whale, to basically take on the obligation, the operations of these much larger players to become a national presence. And I think that's a question that a lot of analysts still have, is moving forward, if this thing is going to work, how exactly does new Charter pay its bills, meet its obligations, and not be limited with a significant amount of debt as it tries to meet customer demands?
It seems to me that one of the parties in play here, Advance Publications, is going to get an immediate $2 billion payday, if I read correctly. How do you justify giving that chunk of change out against this burden of debt?
Well, I don't know how you do. But then again, I'm not in this business. And I think that's just the concern that I think most consumers should have, is that when these mergers take place, typically there's an incentive for the corporations to get larger, for them to take on more debt, for them to reduce workforces, for them to find ways to come up with economies of scale, primarily with national program providers, and typically undercut more regional and local program provision. That's the reason I think we were opposed to the merger as it was moving forward, is this entire question of whether or not local or regional interests would be supported as the corporation gets larger and as those paydays get paid out. Now moving forward, I think there's going to be a significant question as it's trying to meet its obligations. Will new Charter back down on its obligations to local governments, for example? Will it try to lay off its workforce or try to force economy measures? What are the things they're going to be doing to try to make cash flow work as they've got that obligation? So it is a significant question. And I don't know exactly how you justify it, unless to say that it's not prohibited. It may not be a good thing for consumers. It may not be a good thing for communities, but it's not against the law.
Your organization was one of several that forwarded a letter to Tom Wheeler, FCC chairman, urging him to deny this proposed acquisition. Had you received a response of any kind prior to yesterday's announcement by the DOJ?
We've gotten communications from the FCC of their concern about serving the public interest. So as they're proposing conditions on this transaction, they're trying to ensure that a number of their priorities are being met. So they've asked for net neutrality provisions to be put forward on the deal so that there would not be an inhibition on commercial speech by the broadband provider. They've asked for extension of low-income internet subsidies to be able to have more Americans actually have broadband as a result of the deal. So that's what's being proposed right now as part of the FCC's sort of provisional approval. They haven't reached that yet, and I haven't actually seen the substance of what those conditions look like. We'll know more about that in the coming days as the FCC commissioners debate and consider what they need to be able to approve this deal.
As I was taking steps to prepare for this discussion, I came across court documents filed just yesterday by the Department of Justice, which mentioned two things that caught my eye. The first is a competitive impact statement, and the other speaks to a requirement that these companies are going to be made to bear the costs to advise the public that they have a chance to voice either their support or their opposition to this merger. That wants to mean to me that there's still a chance public pressure remains in play as a mechanism by which this merger might be halted.
What you're saying is true, but it's primarily within the state of California where the merger is really at issue. The way transactions like this are approved is that they're approved at both the state utility level as well as the national level in terms of anti-competitive, antitrust discussions. So the Justice Department is looking at whether or not new Charter will use its power to be able to abuse its rights, if you will. And that's the concern about conditions within the FCC and the Justice Department's proposals. At the state level, there's a different sort of set of standards, and there's an open question as to what the conditions will be that will come forward from the California Public Utility Commission. Charter has been asking them to expedite their process, because basically as they're on hold, the price of the stock swap is going up, so the cost of the transaction keeps going up. So the longer there's a delay, the more cost there is to the new charter to be able to have this thing go forward. When the California Public Utilities Commission looked at the proposed merger and acquisition of Comcast and Time Warner, which serves Los Angeles and a significant part of the sort of greater Southland area of California, they were very much concerned about a host of conditions about anti-competitive behavior as it relates to broadband, broadband competition, and video programming over broadband, making sure that the merged entity wouldn't be abusing its power to raise prices, to install data caps, for example, to find ways to be able to cut out providers from getting to consumers' households. The CPUC's conditions significantly weakened Comcast's ability to get that deal done. And some analysts say that that was sort of a linchpin in having that deal ultimately fail, along with some other significant concerns that the Justice Department had. So California is a large state. It's like one-sixth of the American economy. Charter needs California to approve the deal to be able to go forward. So that's kind of where the arena goes forward here in terms of discussions. So we'll know probably in the next month or so what happens there as this thing is moving forward.
I've been talking with Mike Wassenauer. He is the executive director at the Alliance for Community Media. For more information, you can visit their website at allcommunitymedia.org. I'm Robin Ryan, and you're listening to KBOO News.
You're listening to a membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our volunteers work hard every weekday to bring you this coverage of local, national, and international news. Now, it's your turn to contribute to KBOO's mission. Joining us are Seth and Ken to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Yes, here we are. I'm Seth. This is Ken. We're both Joneses, by the way. So there you go. This is our spring membership drive. Give us a call, 877-500-5266. Join us online, kboo.fm. Join the KBOO family. You already are, actually. You're listening to us, which means you're part of the family. You're just not doing your chores.
We have a thank you, Seth. Anna from Southwest Portland, she called to become a member and says she's the proud grandmother of a KBOO Youth Collective member.
Wow.
And the KBOO Youth Collective, for those of you who don't know, KBOO has a program where we have youth ages. I've seen them as young as 10 or so, middle school, high school age. They come down to the radio station to get training in radio, announcing, radio production, engineering, and a lot of them produce shows on KBOO.
Well, this is a ding for
special
Anna.
Programs.
Is that the show Mike Crenshaw does? Does he still do that? No? Oh, sorry.
No, Youth Collective actually has their own show.
Okay.
And they do a lot of feature reporting and things like that. Great way to introduce them to radio.
Yes, and get them involved in community activity.
So, and that's all part of KBOO. Again, if you're not a member, please give us a call during the spring membership drive. Hey, how about right now? 877-500-5266. Seth, there's a number of ways they can contribute. You don't have to give $120 all at once.
We have monthly. We'll take it out of your checking account, savings account, credit card, monthly donations. We love that. It's a stable funding for the station. We can count on that money coming in. It makes it very easy for us. It makes it easy for you. $5 a month, that's $60 a year. $10 a month, that's $120 a year. I pick the easy ones. I'm not good at math. So, and you know, that's it works for us. It works for you. Over 40% of our members give monthly, and the average is about $11.50 a month. So, and if you want to be average, if you want to be above average, give us a call at 877-500-5266. You can also go online, kboo.fm, click on the donate link. We make it easy.
One guideline is an hour's worth of wages per month to give to KBOO and becoming a supporting member. And so if that happens to be $1.50 a month, if it happens to be $20 a month, $10 a month or less, give us a call, 877-500-5266. The folks minding the phones here, again, all volunteers, come down to help us with the spring membership drive. They can guide you through the process, credit card, debit card, electronic funds transfer from a checking account. They make it as simple as can be.
And if you already are a member and you'd like to increase your amount, you can give us a call also and, you know, up the ante and help us out here. 877-500-5266.
And what you're doing is supporting programming like Amy Goodman, which we had at 4 o'clock, and our locally produced newscast at 5 o'clock. So the last story you heard from Robin Ryan, Robin, I was just announced, Lisa Loving, our news director, came in and told me that Robin and also Doug McVeigh, who does the Monday news, won scholarships for a two-day investigative reporting seminar at the University of Oregon next month.
Wow.
Which is fantastic. So Robin actually won that, and Doug won that based on their work at KABU. Mm-hmm. So this has been recognized by the University of Oregon Journalism Department, which is one of the best in the state, maybe the country. It's a pretty good one. And all that training that they do there will go back into our locally produced KABU news. So,
and if you listen to cable and you listen to our news, you know we're different than the corporate sponsored radio station news. We bring you unique perspectives, unique voices. We talk about stories that the mainstream media ignores, and there's a reason they ignore it, because they're told to ignore it by their corporate sponsors. We do not have corporate sponsors. We have no advertising dollars. We get all of our funding from you, the members. 877-500-5266. Keep us keeping on. We depend upon your dollars to keep up this good work. And we know you like the good work because you're listening to us. So give us a call. Go online, kboo.fm. Click on the donate link. 877-500-5266. Give us a call.
Yeah, the town is very much done.
You're listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KABU Evening News. We'd like to remind you that you can call to renew your KABU membership or become a member at any time during this program by calling 877-500-5266. Stay tuned at 6 o'clock for a Queerabu special celebration of trans awareness with Nia Nguyen. At 7 o'clock, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather is rainy with highs around 62 degrees. Today in history, on April 26, 1986, an explosion and fire destroyed the Chernobyl nuclear power plant in the former Soviet Union, touching off one of the biggest known nuclear disasters in world history. The quote of the day is from Ukrainian journalist Svetlana Alexievich, who said in Voices from Chernobyl, the oral history of a nuclear disaster, "Show me a fantasy novel about Chernobyl. There isn't one, because reality is more fantastic."
Jazz musician Herbie Hancock was today part of a group of educators who pitched the concept of using music to teach math and engineering. This meeting took place at the headquarters of the United States Department of Education. Hancock, who studied electrical engineering before going on to a career in music, spoke about an intrinsic link between playing music and building things. He also said that this link should be exploited in the classroom, where there's been a renewed interest in science and math education. The connection between music and math has been known for some time, with research actually proving the benefits of combining the two. In one study, students who received a music lesson that focused on fractions and proportionality scored 50% higher on a fractions test than students who learned with a standard curriculum. Many people believe that teaching music and math together could also have financial benefits for schools. While in many schools, arts education has been pushed out of some curriculums, a new federal education law, the Every Student Succeeds Act, allows for new flexibility to use federal funding for arts education. Combining arts with the sciences could address two concerns at once, allowing for more art education while at the same time increasing an understanding of science. Speakers at the meeting pointed out how music cuts across language, cultural, and achievement barriers to engage a very diverse set of students. Also, Hancock stated that the arts may be a better method of teaching students math and science. It teaches less definable values, such as creative expression and keeping an open mind.
While many of us look fondly back on childhood, there are a lot of issues facing kids today, especially girls. That's why we are happy tonight to welcome Sista Sista, a nonprofit program for girls of African descent. We are joined by Sarah and Nika. Thank you for being here tonight. So how is the experience of Black girls different than that of the experience of other children?
What was the question? I'm sorry.
So what is like the, if you could talk a little bit about the unique experiences that Black girls go through, especially here in Portland.
Okay, sorry about that.
That's okay.
Here in Portland, you know, we're only, as a whole, a small percentage of the population. So with girls of African descent being taught in schools who don't have teachers that look like them and that can connect with them, that's been an issue as far as them having their interest in, but being able to connect with your teachers in school is empowering. So not being able to see role models and have instructors that look like you and that can connect with you culturally, it's a big issue here, as well as with the area itself and gentrification and everybody being spread out and not having a community hub that we can all build our village in. It creates a sense of disconnect culturally, and that's one of the issues that our girls face.
Well, let's talk about your organization and how you're looking to fill those holes and help these girls that, you know, are really struggling here. So what kind of activities and services do you guys provide?
Well, we're a mentoring organization, so we provide one-on-one mentoring as well as peer mentoring. Our staff as well as our facilitators are all women of African descent. So we provide role models. We create and provide culturally specific curriculum geared toward our girls. And we bring them together to do different activities, workshops, events. We put our girls through a Media Smarts workshop in winter, which led to a partnership with Portland Community Media. And our girls got to learn hands-on experience with film production and editing, where they created their own documentary, which will be screening this coming Thursday at 6:30 at SEI. The girls created the documentary from start to finish. It's a look at the effects of gentrification in Portland, Oregon on professional women of African descent, as well as a media exploration of being a girl in Portland, Oregon of African descent.
Well, let's talk a little about your documentary. So who inspired you? Did you guys present this to the girls, or did the girls say, we want to make a documentary? How did this come about?
Well, our Media Smarts program, we spent a lot of time looking at how we are, how we appear in the media, and different stereotypes, and how the media views us as girls and women of African descent. And we started a lot of conversations with our girls on how that makes them feel, and if it is an accurate account of who we are. And that most people think that how we're supposed to be and act, and the girls said that's not us. And so they were curious on how they can change that. And so when it came to partnering with PCM, they wanted to present a true account of who they are. And that kind of got it started. And then when they were interviewing different professional women of African descent in our communities, they asked them questions about how gentrification affects them and their business. And so that kind of got the dialogue started, and then the project just created, not itself, but the girls kind of steered it on with their interest.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about the girls that that you guys are mentoring. One thing I found unique is that they're in a very specific age group. Can you talk about the ages that you're choosing to serve?
Well, we do serve girls ages 8 to 18, and then our workshops are broken up into different cohorts, so age-appropriate cohorts. So we have a 8 to 11 cohort, 12 through 14, and then high school cohort. So that way that our conversations are different in each one, and then we can, they're just age-appropriate because the conversation changes.
It seems like a time when girls are really needing mentorship, a time where they're somehow seemingly kind of underserved. I was actually reading a bit about from your very, very informational, like the, what's this called, the pamphlet. And I really didn't really think about this, how you say here that, you know, most programs are focused on children when we think about children between the ages of 0 and 5, and that adolescent girls are very much underserved. And so you guys are seeing this in that community. And so the adolescent girls, I'm sure this is very exciting for them to be part of something where they're allowed to have a voice in this documentary. How have they responded to seeing it?
Voice is important. We talk about self-confidence a lot and to build self-esteem. They have blossomed in the time that we've been working with them throughout this school year. We talk about the power of voice and presence. I don't know. It's been fun watching them come alive and really own who they are.
So how can people who are not participating in your program support girls of African descent? How can the community help?
Well, they could definitely help by supporting an organization like ours. I believe we are the only mentoring organization in this area that is specific to girls of African descent in our age range. Our website is www.sistasista.org. That's SISTASISTAH.org. We do have a donate button. But we're also always taking volunteers, get your daughters connected with us through our website. We take applications. We are starting two new workshops in May. We're starting a leadership workshop for high schoolers who will be in the 9th through 11th grade in this coming fall. Our workshop starts May 5th. And we're holding orientation this Saturday at 10 a.m. And then we also have another workshop who we've partnered with, Black Butterfly, starting May 14th. It's a poetry and performance workshop, and that'll be starting Saturday, May 14th.
And for what ages is that?
The poetry workshop is from 8 to 18, and then the leadership workshop is for incoming high school students.
So is there something about this community that you wish more people who are moving to Portland, the Portland area, understood?
That we are a community. So as dispersed and displaced as we are a community, and we do need to come together.
Can you say that again? So your website again. Oh. So anybody who's interested in your workshops, how can they learn more about it?
Yeah. We are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of that. But our website is www.sistasista.org. That's SISTASISTAH.org.
So I'm fascinated to hear about the origins of Sista. How did you guys come about? How did you create this? What made you do it and succeed like it's succeeding?
Well, growing up in this community, I was born and raised in Northeast Portland, and I grew up in a family where it wasn't the traditional home style. I had two parents that were on drugs, so basically the community raised me. I went from home to home, and so that did not stop me from doing well in school, so I still succeeded in you know, elementary school, middle school, high school, and completed college. But I always wished that there was a network of people or a village of people that were able to see the needs that I needed met. But I was able to get through school without any help or anyone saying, you know, is there anything wrong? How can we help? It was like no one noticed. And so I tried to create an organization that I would have wanted as a child, like things I knew that weren't done for myself. You know, being able to connect with other ladies of African descent or other youth of African descent that might be going through the same issues I'm going through, or maybe someone needs help in school, or, you know, or help filling out an application for college and different things like that. That is most of the things that are overlooked, but you know, that need guidance by older people. And plus I have a daughter who's 10 years old, and so I want her to be able to be involved in something that can help actually uplift her and keep her connected to her community.
Well, that is very inspiring, and I am just really glad that something like that's happening here in Portland.
Thank you.
How many mentors do you guys have in your organization?
Right now we have approximately 30 mentors, and we are enrolling another 30 peer mentors in high school this week.
Wow, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, we're running out of time here, so I just want to thank you guys for coming in and talking about this with us. And so once again, let's get that website.
It's www.sistasista.org. That's SISTASISTAH.org.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's Sister. Go ahead and check out that website to learn how you can help support their cause or how you can learn more about their upcoming workshops. Thank you guys for coming in.
Thank you.
Well, right now is your chance as a listener to show support for the work that our volunteers put in to bring you this newscast, rain or shine, every weekday throughout the year. And joining us are Seth and Ken, both of them, as they tell us, Jones, to talk about how you can support community radio.
Oh, thanks, Robert, and thanks, Jenna. Thanks for that wonderful interview with the folks at Sista Sista. There was one thing that was said that really struck home here. The interviewee mentioned that we're living in a very diverse community, but we need to come together. How do you do that? I think KABU is one way that we come together. We have probably the most diverse programming, or certainly of any radio station in Portland.
Without a doubt.
And maybe the United States. And that's a way of bringing people together. I mean, when you listen to cable, you're listening to different members of the community. You're listening to, today we had Hispanic music and talk. We have public affairs in the morning. Sundays is just kind of a hodgepodge. There's the Persian hour, the Jewish hour.
And the Haida music, which I love.
Incredible. We have jazz, soul, hard rock, punk rock. Grateful Dead Hour.
Lots of eclectic, which I love. I call the DJs, the other DJs here all the time, and I know a lot about music, and I call them and say, what was that? And I love it because everyone here really loves what they do. They really dig deep. They're really passionate about the music. And so if you want to help us, we help you, you got to help us. 877-500-5266. KBOO.FM online, hit the donate link. Our news and talk programs, they go to things that no one else talks about. We go to the controversial, the neglected perspectives, the stories that the news media forgets. Our hosts and reporters are all volunteers. We're all community members and neighbors just like you. And your dollars are what help us keep on keeping this great programming going. 877
I'm sorry, Seth. I stepped on the phone number there.
I was just going to say the number. That's it. 877-500-5266. Over to you, Ken.
I was just going to say that if you value KABU, our programming, our diversity, and also KABU as a tool of bringing people together, become a member if you're not already a member, or renew your membership. 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. You can call right now. We have people standing by to answer the phones, guide you through the process. You can pay a one-time membership fee or a contribution, a monthly contribution, which we love. About 40% of our members do that. Credit card, debit card, electronic funds transfer. I heard a rumor we also accept cash on occasion. So 877-500-5266.
Recent testing in the waters near crippled Fukushima nuclear power plant has revealed radiation levels as high, and in many places higher than previous measurements. The Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute, which has been the only organization or government actively testing the Pacific Ocean for radiation from Fukushima, recently declared that the radiation releases are not yet under control. The high radiation levels have caused more than 1,000% increase in thyroid cancer rates for children living in the Fukushima province, and reports are showing a large spike in childhood deaths. The Fukushima province is also experiencing a surge in birth defects and stillborn deaths of infants, including babies being born with extra arms and legs. Nuclear safety expert Arnie Gunderson is also reporting a large increase in cases of gargantuanism occurring in locally grown vegetables, although the Japanese government claims the vegetables are safe to eat. Accurate reporting has also been difficult since the Japanese government passed a state secrets law, basically declaring all Fukushima research a national security issue subject to censorship. When the Fukushima nuclear power plant suffered multiple full meltdowns on March 11th of 2011, it released as much radiation as 1,000 atomic bombs going off. More than 450 tons of highly radioactive water still flows daily into the Pacific Ocean. Plant owners admit it will take several levels of new inventions in order to create robotic equipment that can withstand the high levels of radiation and actually clean up and decommission the contaminated nuclear power plant.
It's 5:44, time for community rights commentary from Paul Cienfuegos.
Greetings, you're listening to the weekly commentary by yours truly, Paul Cienfuegos. Each week I share stories with you about the rapidly growing community rights movement across the U.S. With very few exceptions, most of the 200 communities that have passed these local right of self-government ordinances have focused on environmental protection, banning corporate fracking, water withdrawal for bottling, factory farms, etc. Up until now, the primary exception has been Spokane, Washington, which has been working hard to pass a worker bill of rights through the ballot box. But now, there's a second and very exciting and unusual addition to our collection of local ordinances passed to date. Last month, a small New Hampshire community decided to respond directly to the creeping fascism that is seeping out of the mouths of leading Republican presidential candidates. Today, I'm going to read from a recent press release from the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, and I will let their words tell today's story. On Saturday, March 12th, residents of the town of Barnstead, New Hampshire, took an unprecedented step at their annual town meeting, unanimously enacting a community bill of rights law, establishing the right to be free from religious identification requirements. The first in the nation law was drafted at the town's request by the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund to protect Barnstead residents from political and civil persecution based on their religious beliefs. The passage of the right to be free from religious identification